This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Look, you're 3 weeks, a bit more than 3 weeks outside of NHL training camp, early January. So everybody involved in the process, yeah, they're hopeful, but there are many who are also very skeptical. I've talked about club executives, general managers, player agents. They recognize the amount of work that has to get done. And oh, yeah. You know, there's still COVID-19.
That's Darren Dreger talking about the possibility of that January 13th day coming to fruition for the start of the 2021 season. Time will tell, of course, if that will be the case. Fingers crossed. We all want to see some hockey back on the ice and some, you know, real live sports that we can watch aside from, random NFL games taking place on Tuesday afternoons, Wednesday mornings.
I don't know, I'm really enjoying the Canadian Lumberjack Challenge replays on TSN.
Well, you got a bit of a lumberjack look going on there, I would have to say, with the big burly beard and everything else, but I've never seen you swing an axe, and I don't think that would end very well for anybody.
I've never used a saw.
No, anyways.
I've got an axe in the backyard. If you want a hat, you know, you can use it.
You dial 9-1, and then when he hits his leg, I'll dial 1 again, and we'll be good to go. Yeah. Let's check out the Odd Shark inbox. A lot of comments coming in regarding the conversation about sort of rethinking the NHL that we've had over the last 30 or so minutes. The Odd Shark inbox, of course, presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Comment coming in on via text. Hey boys, love the discussion on the illegal hockey curve. Close enough. We'll take it. Anyways, my thought would be, why not have a tournament for all the teams that didn't make the playoffs? Whoever wins that tournament would get the number one pick. That's just my thought for the day. Have a good one and happy Hanukkah. Well, thank you very much to that texter for that comment and those nice Hanukkah comments as well. So, you know, maybe a tournament. Anything to think outside the box, as far as I'm concerned, that would be important. Ken chiming in via Twitter, I've been talking about this idea for years. The NHL is way too old school and the draft lottery is done poorly. No excitement. The NHL needs to award teams for not tanking. I'm glad someone else feels the same way.
I agree with Ken on a few of those points, but I wouldn't say that the draft lottery isn't exciting. I mean, ask Jets fans back in 2016 or ask New York Rangers fans recently. That wasn't exciting?
Well, it's exciting for one team for a brief moment in time, whereas,
right.
You know, if you engagement for a lot of teams that are out of the playoffs.
I said last segment, I'm in favor of the gold plan, so I'm not disagreeing with the gold plan, but you can't say that the draft lottery isn't exciting.
Fine. Okay. Fair enough. Anyways, you want to keep your comments coming. We'll read them throughout the show. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net.
Drew, just quickly, I will say this much. I think the NHL can make it even more exciting. Instead of having, you know, ball guy, whoever that was, like that accountant or, you know, I'm not sure what his, you know, full-time job is.
I think he'll work for Deloitte.
Yeah, so, you know, he works for Deloitte, so he's an accountant. Boring. You know, maybe they can get, you know, a celebrity or something like that to you know, pick the balls. Like, you know, I really liked how, you know, they had the late Alex Trebek make the pick for the Ottawa Senators.
Like, Kevin Connolly?
Yeah, like, you know, get a celebrity to pick the ball. Like, I don't
make it seem like it's so serious. Well, like, as I said off air, you know, like they're electing a pope or something with the drama and everyone's wearing their dark suits and they got their stern, most serious faces on as if it's, you know, as if they're sitting there thinking they, you know, this is going to be the difference between a life and death matter.
Like, have fun with it. Do it by the beach. Have GMs, you know, like, sipping on a, you know, a Mai Tai. Like, just, like have some fun with it.
I'd like to see Ezzy sipping on a Mai Tai.
Or maybe an Alabama Slammer.
Okay, but maybe not at all. the return to play. So they're talking about January 13th. We mentioned off at the start of the show, training camp for the teams that didn't qualify on December 31st. Everybody else's training camp, maybe on January 3rd. Of course, they still don't know what the new divisions are going to look like. You know basically what the Canadian division is. That one's easy. And you know most of the West division, but everything else is up in the air at that point.
How about this? Why not just have a division lottery?
Well, you know, that's how they did, you know, before the NFL realigned, that's how they actually did it back in the day when the AFL and the NFL merged, all the teams were just randomly drawn out of a lottery, which is why, you know, the NFC East, for example, had a team like the Arizona Cardinals in it, mm-hmm. which had obviously geographically.
And then the Buffalo Bills, right?
Well, the Bills were always in the AFC East, but geographically, it made no sense for a long time yeah. as to why these teams were in mm-hmm. Different divisions like that. It was just sort of done out of a random drawing, but that's
definitely a digression
on my part.
This seems pretty random when you have the Minnesota Wild and the Tampa Bay Lightning in the same division.
Well, I think they're thinking about the divisional alignment all wrong. Instead of having, there shouldn't be, and I said this on Twitter earlier this week, there shouldn't be a central division for mm-hmm. this coming season. It doesn't make any sense. You have an East division, which is all the New York-based teams, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, the Sabres, the Red Wings,
Philly,
the Blue Jackets, and then you have what I'm going to call a South division. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you need a central division. You take sort of your southernmost teams, Dallas, Nashville, and the Florida teams.
Yeah, Carolina.
Carolina, Washington. Yeah. And I know a lot of those teams aren't in the per se South, but they're close enough.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
You almost just call them, Drew, like Division 1, Division 2,
sure.
Division 3,
don't
Division 4.
Don't get hung up so much on the titles of the names.
Yeah.
But you sort of take the Central Division and you just split up the Central Division among the other divisions. And you mm-hmm. try and keep as many quote-unquote rivalries as possible. So in my plan, which we call the Drew plan,
Oh God!
This sounds like a terrible plan.
Yeah. Well, you take the three teams that are in the Central Division that are in the South: Dallas, Nashville, and my example, I also use St. Louis.
Yeah.
Sort of the southern,
Midwest, but okay.
Midwest, but close enough.
They're southern.
Yeah. But you take them and you put them into a South Division with Tampa and with Florida and with Carolina and with Washington.
Yeah.
And with Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is a bit of an outlier, but at least Pittsburgh gets to keep their rivalry with Washington in that way. Mm-hmm. And the Central Division teams get to keep their rivalry.
Yeah.
Instead, they're trying to do this weird, bizarre Central Division that doesn't make any sense.
And the problem is you're aggravating teams, right? Because
yeah.
at one moment we hear St. Louis is out west, and then we hear they're not going to be, and Minnesota's going to be, and then teams are saying they're happy with it. It's just, it's very, the reality is, and it just goes to kind of further illustrate to me how crazy this whole idea that they think they're going to start, in like
a month,
18 days.
Well, that's
like
training camp.
Training camp in 18 days. Like, you're telling me you don't even know what the divisions are? I mean, I would imagine if you don't know the divisions, then you don't have a schedule.
Yeah.
And we know that usually the NHL schedules take, like, they start on it the preceding year.
Sure.
So, but to kind of confirm that this is obviously in motion, this is in play, I put on the site yesterday that you had Juuso Luoto and Christian Vesalainen returning from Liga, which is suspended anyways. So you've got two Jets guys who are coming back for training camp. That's what their Finnish teams reported. And then today, I put on the site that David Gustafsson is on his way back from Sweden. So his time in Tingsryd, which is his hometown, is done, and he's moving back. He'll be coming back to Winnipeg for training camp, obviously to quarantine and then to get ready for training camp. So clearly, things are in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is official from their teams over in Sweden or in Finland. So obviously, the Jets haven't tweeted it, haven't made anything official, but the teams over there have. So we know that they're already in the process of leaving their loan agreements behind. So something's in motion, but again, it just seems crazy to me that we're 18 days away from a training camp that could be a training camp for a season that maybe you delay the season a little bit while you're trying to work all this stuff out. It just seems that there's so much on the fly.
It seems like January 13th
is very unrealistic.
At this point, I just want to know when the season is starting, and I want to know what the divisions are going to be. I realize there are things in play, and St. Louis was in one division, and now St. Louis might be in another division. And, looking at, the divisional alignment, and I don't disagree with you, Drew, in terms of, your proposed divisional realignment, but, you look at what they're calling, the Central U.S. division,
mm-hmm.
because you've got the two Florida teams. Like, to me, Tampa Bay lucks out big time
Tampa Bay doesn't have any competition.
Carolina, Columbus are good teams, but you've got, Detroit, you've got the Blackhawks, the Wild, and the Predators, right?
Team.
So, if you're those Central teams,
yeah.
You weren't top Central teams, right, when you're comparing those teams to, like, Colorado, Winnipeg, Dallas,
yeah.
right? And now you've got Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Columbus in that division.
Well, that's the other part of my proposal, and I'm being very tongue-in-cheek when I'm calling it my proposal.
The Drew plan.
But, yeah, the Drew plan. But, what I'm saying is, if you use my plan, at least there's more competitive balance.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I imagine that what some, because we heard from Darren Dreger, and Pierre LeBrun that, you know, some teams aren't really happy with the divisional realignment. Mm-hmm. You know, another team that stood out to me, I don't know if this team stood out to you guys, but in that Eastern U.S. division, like the Buffalo Sabres aren't liking the fact that, you know, you're going to have to go up against the Rangers and the Boston Bruins and the Washington Capitals, and say whatever you want about the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins are going to be a team that's fighting for a playoff spot. I mean, they're usually in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They might not be a contender anymore, but I mean, you look at the Sabres. I look at those teams specifically that are trying to get over that hump, right, Dave? Like, the Sabres haven't been in the playoffs for how many years now?
Like a ten?
And you kind of realign, and instead of playing the Ottawa Senators in your division, right, like you're playing, you know, these metropolitan teams.
Yeah.
So the Buffalo Sabres, that division doesn't look very, you know, competitive for them. They're obviously going to be better this year, but, you know, the divisional realignment, it kind of looks like they kind of just moved a couple of teams here, a couple of teams there, and there's no real rhyme or reason.
A lot of it, I think that I don't know. They seem to be overcomplicating it from my perspective. Right. I mean, it's not like I sat there, you know, with an abacus, you know, trying, you know, for a long time trying to figure out these better divisions.
I was going to say, I don't know why you need an abacus to figure out a geographic problem, but okay. Well,
I wanted to
factor in flight times and
get
mileage.
A scientific calculator, Drew. They're readily available. But, I mean, the abacus hasn't been used since you know, yesteryear.
Sine, cosine, and tangent.
That is when Drew was coming up in learning math in the 1920s.
Galileo was my teacher, if you didn't know that.
No, but the only thing I
shouldn't speak. I probably couldn't pass grade 6 math right
when,
now.
When did the lockout end? Do you remember the approximate date?
The like, lockout?
The 2012 or? Lockout.
Well, I don't remember exactly. January something, I think, right?
But they actually came. But what I'm saying is that they came and they played on the 17th, yeah. I believe, of January. Now, I would imagine, though, the NHL already had a series of schedules in place, and they didn't have to do this realignment. So I'm not saying it's impossible for them to try and have this mid-January start. I'm just saying with the remaining uncertainty, it seems more and more unlikely.
When we come back, U.S.-based team executives predict the all-Canadian division. Where do the Jets fall in those predictions? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
At number four for me, my old guy, but only 27 years old, Mark Scheifele. He's left off a lot of these lists, and I can't figure out why. He drives one of the top offenses in the league. He does everything so well, has a complete game.
That's TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin talking about the top centerman in the Canadian division. Some high praise for Mark Scheifele from Mr. Poulin there. The Canadian division, as we've talked about really for the last number of weeks, and we've talked about this morning, is going to be a dogfight, like something we haven't seen in a long, long time. So much so, the good folks at The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, I'll give him credit, you know, he went out and he spoke to U.S.-based team executives, and he said to them, "How do you think the all-Canadian division is going to play out?" And really, to no one's surprise, the Jets were certainly not an overwhelming favorite. They were certainly not thought of in extremely good light. Of the 15 execs who submitted their rankings, the Jets were in sixth place in the Canadian division. Six different times. So a lot of people think the Jets are going to be towards the bottom of that Canadian division. The Leafs got 9 first place votes. The Flames got 4 first place votes. And the Montreal Canadiens got 2 first place votes. So, you know, you can say what you want about the Toronto-based bias, but at least these are U.S.-based team executives.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised by that because, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the show, like, and, you know, people out there will probably disagree with me, and you guys might disagree with me, but, you know, and there's no Toronto bias here, but if you're talking about talent, you know, Toronto has the most talent. I mean, you look at, you know, whether it's up the middle, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, you know, bringing in TJ Brody, you know, to complement Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin. The only area I think that Toronto isn't above average in terms of this division goes is Freddie Anderson. Like, Freddie Anderson, I think, is a good goaltender. But, you know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, Jacob Markstrom, like, those are the two best goalies. You know, and obviously Ottawa, you know, upgraded with Matt Murray there. But
Carey Price would like to have a word with
sure.
you, young man.
Yeah, well, I didn't mention Carey Price either, but, you know.
You're right. The teams with goaltending.
Price, Hellebuck, and Markstrom are the three best goalies in that division. And I don't even know if, you know, Freddie Anderson is the fourth best goalie in that division. So I think aside from goaltending, Toronto has the most talent. But after that, like, you know, everyone's going to put Ottawa as the worst team in this division, and rightfully so. I mean, they're going to be better this year. You know, we mentioned they picked up Matt Murray, and, you know, they picked up some other players, Evgeny Dadonov, Alex Galchenyuk. Like, they've made some nice moves, but nobody expects them to be a top team in this division.
They should be better and more competitive, but no one expects them to be one of the top, anything other than the seventh place team.
Exactly. So between two and six, Drew, you can't tell me that there's, you know, a discernible difference between, you know, the Jets or the Flames or the Oilers or the Canucks. Like, the Flames took a step forward when it comes to goaltending, but they took a step back because they lost a couple of good defensemen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Chris Tanev is a good defenseman, but he's not TJ Brody. And then you talk about Vancouver. I mean, Braden Holtby's not as good as Jacob Markstrom is, all due respect to, you know, Braden Holtby. At least the last 3 years, Holtby hasn't been as good. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about Edmonton. Like, I could hear an argument that, you know, Edmonton is the second best team in this division.
Edmonton could be the second best team in the division, or they could be the second worst team in the
division.
All about the goaltending.
Exactly.
I mean, you look at all the teams, and they all have what I'll say are question marks. Actually, the only team that I think doesn't have a real significant question mark is the Montreal Canadiens.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Canadiens, top to bottom,
they're very even.
Yeah. I mean, sure, they may not have the dynamic offensive firepower, but, I mean, you got the goaltending. We know how good their defense is. You know, a guy like Josh Anderson, if he comes in and he's able to, you know, if he's better than what Max Domi was, those Canadiens are going to be very competitive.
Got to mention Tyler Toffoli.
Toffoli.
Like, Tyler, the argument against,
especially getting Toffoli from another Canadian team.
Yeah, they didn't
Vancouver.
Give anything up, right? Yeah, like, he was a free agent, right? So, like, you've gotten better on the wings. We've talked about that right side. I mean, Nick Suzuki and Kotkaniemi are two of the most exciting young centers in the NHL.
Right.
And, you know, Philip Deneau, we're not sure what's going to happen with his next contract. Deneau might be a guy that gets traded.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you've got Deneau, Suzuki, Kotkaniemi up the middle, you know, bringing in a depth defenseman like Joel Edmondson, like, the Habs are really set, you know, this year. And I agree. I mean, I could hear an argument that the Habs are one of the top teams in the East, but it all depends on not only goaltending, but, you know, how some of these young players develop. So, I mean, this Canadian division is wide open. And I believe when the Athletic did their modeling, the Jets were tied for second, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of points with Calgary. Like, Toronto was one, and then Calgary and Winnipeg were two.
Time will tell, and we'll do, of course, our comprehensive team-by-team, division-by-division preview towards the start of the season. But it is some fascinating food for thought on the perspective of U.S.-based team executives. When we come back, Marty B. Ron, TSN hockey analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Saturday morning, hope you're having a good one. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. Want your comments about anything you've heard, anything on your mind related to the game of hockey? We were asking you for your Jets players, management, coaches who are under the most pressure entering the 2021 season. Let us know your thoughts. Maybe we'll read them on air. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, TSN hockey analyst Marty B. Ron. Marty, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Beautiful Saturday in December, and hockey's around the corner, so, hey, we can't ask for much more, right?
That's true. Hopefully it sooner rather than later. We know that January 13th date is the target, and hopefully they'll be able to reach that target, and we can get back to talking about some games on the ice. And, Marty, obviously we brought you on to talk about, you know, the goings-on throughout the NHL. And, you know, we've been talking about here on the program just the layoff for so many players and how it's been so long for players, some of them to really be, since they've last played a competitive hockey game, 9 months, 10 months for certain players. Do you think that's going to impact goaltenders more than it will skaters? Or do you think that, you know, one side versus the other has an advantage there?
No, I think it will impact goalies a little bit more, and obviously no preseason games is going to impact the first few games of the season. I always loved, even if it was just playing a half a game, a period, a full game, You know, it feels like that preseason game or the two preseason games that you play get you going for the season. So I think what you can expect in the first couple of weeks, maybe even months of the regular season is, you know, some save percentages that are below the norm, some breakdowns also through the systems of teams, which is going to expose goalies as well. So I do believe that, you know, the players, they're going to have their speed. You know, the skating is going to be there. Maybe the execution is not going to be at an all-time high. It's not going to be mid-season form. But individually, they can overcome that. Goalies is going to be a little bit tougher. So I do think out of the gate, the top goalies are going to really put their teams in an advantage for the season because it's going to be a little bit tougher for everybody when they get going.
So Marty, earlier in the show, we were talking about which Jets are going to be under the most pressure heading into the 2021 season, and we all agreed that, you know, Connor Hellebuck is at the top of that list, and we expect him to have an excellent season because he's been one of the top goalies in the NHL for, I guess, 3 or 4 years now. But, you know, as a former NHL goalie, in your opinion, is there more pressure on a goalie following up a Vezina Trophy season, or is that something that, you know, maybe the media makes it out to be, you know, more than it really is?
I think it's more, the media makes it out more than what it actually is. If you talk to Connor Hellebuck now, he probably is not even thinking about the fact that he won the Vezina last year. He's thinking about January 13th, the Canadian division, the matchups, his team, who's there, who's not. That's really what they're thinking about. So if you look back in 2011-12, Henrik Lundqvist won the Vezina Trophy with the New York Rangers. I was his partner. And then we missed the start of the 2012-2013 season with a lockout. So when we showed up in January for the start of the next NHL season, Hank was not thinking, hey, I won the Vezina last year. Wow, there's going to be a lot of pressure on me this year. He never mentioned it, never talked about it. It was all about, hey, we need to have success. We need to get out of the gates good. We need to put it all together as soon as possible so we can get the advantage on the rest of the teams. So it was not about the Vezina Trophy. It was not about last year. So for Connor Hellebuck, I think he's probably already forgotten it. It's great. It's a great award. But, you know, that's all it is. It's an award, and you move on.
Now, Marty, we know how important conditioning is in today's game, but one thing that obviously will happen with a condensed schedule is that, you know, there's going to be more. It's going to be a lot more taxing on your body. Is there going to be a big advantage for teams that have platoons for their goaltenders as opposed to, like, a situation in Winnipeg where you have Connor Hellebuck playing, like, 75% of the games?
Well, I think every team this year is going to look at the schedule and say, hey, we need to spread it over our two goalies. We need to have a really solid backup, a good support system to our starter, and we're going to stick to a plan, right? Well, 3 weeks or a month into it, the plan goes out the window because some teams are not playing as well as they would want to, so then they maybe start playing their starter a lot more than what they originally planned they were going to do. Some teams, their backup is not performing well, so hey, it's all about the starting goalie. Let's get us some win. I mean, there's only 56 games. You can't afford to go on a 3, 4, 5, 6 game losing streak. It's too much of a percentage of your season that goes down the drain. So again, I go off my experience. In 2013, I played 5 games in 48. I had 5 starts and I had only one in the last month of the season. And John Tortorella came to me and he was like, Marty, I think you're going to get a start this weekend. I'm like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready, Torts. I'm going to go. And then all of a sudden, you lose a couple of games, and then Torts would come to me and say, you know what, I'm going to play Hank on back-to-back this weekend. We really need to get these wins. We're battling for playoff spot. And I'd be like, I get that, but not like I'm going to lose you the game automatically, but I'm ready to go. And he was hesitant to put me in because we were struggling to stay in the playoff race, right? We ended up making the playoffs, but I only had one start in the last month of the season. So it's the old boxing plan, right? You have a plan until you get punched in the face, and I think there's a lot of teams that are going to get punched in the face early, and the plan's going to go out the window.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Marty, of course, as an analyst for TSN. You know, Marty, to that point, you know, with the abbreviated season and the shortened, condensed schedule, you know, those teams that might spend their first month sort of trying to figure out their goaltending situation, you know, I'm going to look at teams this year like Edmonton with Koskinen and Smith, or Vancouver with Holtby and Demko, you know, typically in an 82-game season, they maybe have that first month to try and get a feel for how their goaltenders are going to shake out. How much of a disadvantage does that put them at for this season when they know that they don't have that month in which to sort of experiment, for lack of a better word?
Well, I mean, if I look at the Canadian division, and it is the second toughest division, in my opinion, in the upcoming year, I think the East, with Boston, Buffalo, New York, New Jersey, Philly, Pittsburgh, Washington, I think that's the toughest division out there. But in the Canadian division, I look at three teams right now that, for me, are going to separate themselves from the pack early on. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Winnipeg Jets. Why? Because of their goaltending. I really believe they have superior goaltending to the other four teams in the Canadian division. Now, I really love the Vancouver Canucks as a team, and they may be the exception to the rule that maybe they can... You know, they got Braden Holtby, they've got Thatcher Demko. I think their goaltending is good enough. I think they may slip in the top three. But when you look at Winnipeg, Montreal, and Toronto, I believe that their experienced goaltending, they're in a better position early on to take the lead and maybe bank in some points that are going to be really important down the stretch. So that's the way I look at it. If I'm making my preseason prediction for the first month, those are the three teams I believe will stand out early on, mostly because I think you can bet on their goaltending more than the rest of the division.
And Marty, you mentioned the Eastern Division, and we were talking about that, a couple of segments ago. And you know, you cover the Buffalo Sabres, and you obviously used to play for the Buffalo Sabres, and you know, for MSG and the Instigators. And when you saw that, you know, proposed divisional realignment, and you know, we should mention that it's not set in stone. There might be a few teams that switch, but it looks like there's a good chance that Buffalo is going to be with those New York area teams and the Boston Bruins and the Washington Capitals. And just wanted to, you know, ask you what you thought of the Sabres' chances, considering they're going to be in that stacked division. I mean, we know that, you know, the Sabres went out and acquired Taylor Hall and Eric Staal, also picked up Winnipegger Cody Eakin. But would you agree that that's going to be a pretty tough division for them to make the playoffs in?
Yeah, it's a tough division, and we don't know what the playoff format's going to be. It's most likely going to be the top four teams in every division because there's no cross play. So you got to just look at your division. So, I mean, if you look at the division, I think the New Jersey Devils, they're still rebuilding. They're young. They're not what the rest of the division is. So you put them at the bottom. But then after that, Buffalo's a good team. It's a much improved and much better team. But how much better are they than the other teams in the division? Now, I think Buffalo can compete with the New York Rangers. I think Buffalo can compete with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think Buffalo can compete with the New York Islanders. But when you look at Washington, I think Washington's up there. Philly finished the season really strong last year. They struggled in the bubble, but I think Philly's still a really good team. And Boston is going to dip a little bit, but they're really strong. So now you are one team competing with four other teams for that last playoff spot. And that's so difficult because if you looked at the old Atlantic division, well, you have Ottawa that's rebuilding. You had Detroit that's rebuilding. You have Florida that's taking a huge dip. So for me, it's really like Buffalo, where they were looking at knocking on the door of the playoffs, now are knocking at the bottom of the division, and they're hoping to get lucky and get in the playoffs. So it's unfortunate, but it's the way it is, and it's a pandemic, so you got to just do what you got to do.
And Marty, is there one player you're keying in on this season that's kind of like someone that may take the Sabres camp, may take a spot that folks aren't really paying attention to?
Well, I think there's one, and we're going to see him at the World Juniors Tournament this year with Team Canada, Dylan Cousins. Obviously, you know, you look at teams like Toronto, who did not let Nick Robertson go to Team USA. You've got the New York Rangers, who are not letting Alexis Lafreniere go to Team Canada. But the Sabres are letting Dylan Cousins go to the World Juniors because they feel it's going to be better for him when he returns. He's going to have played a high-level tournament. And I don't think even if it wasn't a pandemic and even if we were in the regular times, I really don't think he would go back to the Western Hockey League. I think he's ready for the NHL. So for me, Dylan Cousins is the type of player that we should keep our eyes on because he will definitely surprise a lot of people. He's got great skills. He's a fantastic player, and I think he'll be in Buffalo and will help the Sabres hopefully get in the playoffs and get themselves in the middle of the division pack here.
Marty Biron is an analyst with TSN. You also know his work on Buffalo Sabres broadcast with MSG. Marty, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Happy holidays to you and yours. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great holiday season and see you mid-January for hockey.
Absolutely, Marty. Looking forward to it. Thanks again. When we come back, the Vegas Golden Knights are in salary cap trouble and they're allegedly shopping their top goal scorer from last year. I guess depending on which insider you believe in this instance. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
They have been taking calls on Max Pacioretty and Jonathan Marchessault and Marc-Andre Fleury, which has kind of been the case for most of this offseason. It's going to be really tough for them to move one of those players considering their contract, but it's just something that Kelly McCrimmon is out there sending the feelers out, seeing what the market's like. It was obviously not a good trade market before things kind of slowed down here. I think he's just kind of trying to test the waters and see what it is now.
That's Vegas Golden Knights reporter Jesse Granger talking about the trade market and the trade possibility for Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty, of course, led the Golden Knights in goals last season, and he's allegedly on the market as the Golden Knights are in salary cap difficulty. That was sort of there was a bit of a Twitter war earlier this week. If you had the opportunity to see it. Frank Saravelli reporting the same thing, and then Greg Wyshynski denying it, and then it sort of descended from that point in time. If you want to see a Twitter fight, you can check it out online. I'm sure you can find out how to do that.
Well, Frank was right. I mean, Jesse Granger backed up
yeah.
what Frank was reporting.
Yeah.
So
I know it was.
Second round knockout.
I'm just an interested observer who enjoys watching people have fights on Twitter. I'm not getting involved in any of them.
Yeah, because you know what's really worthwhile? Fighting in hockey Twitter.
Fighting online with random people. Yeah,
what a waste of energy.
It is a bit of a waste of energy. I would agree with that assessment there, Mr. Minuk. Anyways, welcome back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program, it's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Last night, another tremendously successful Zoom comedy show. They're going to do another one next Friday. Every Friday night, Zoom comedy shows. And the quality of entertainer and the quality of comedian that is on these Zoom comedy shows is stupendous. It's festival worthy. Tickets available. You do need a ticket. You can get it online, rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for something to do on a Friday night, kick up your feet, watch some comedy at home. It's a little bit of a bizarre experience because normally you're used to being there on Cordon Avenue at Rumors. But Code Red and all that, this is the next best thing. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com for next Friday's Zoom comedy show.
Shout out to our boy Benji Rothman, who a couple of weeks ago was part of the Rumors Zoom comedy show.
Yeah.
So, good friends with Benji, and I haven't had the opportunity to check one out, but I'm looking forward to it. I've heard of other people that have attended them, and they've really enjoyed them. So definitely, if you have a chance, buy a ticket.
Exactly right. So the talk, of course, about the Golden Knights and their salary cap troubles. And I mean, their salary cap troubles, I would say, are not to the extent of the Tampa Bay Lightning. They might be looking for a little bit of salary cap wiggle room, but they're only about $1 million over the salary cap right now. And it's not like they have any significant players they need to sign.
No, and, you know, sorry to cut you off, Drew, but I was going to mention in Jesse Granger's article that he wrote why the Golden Knights shouldn't trade Pacioretty. And, you know, we're good buddies with Jesse. We had him on one of our Zoom casts or curve casts that you like to call it, Drew.
Yes.
But he mentions that, you know, Nick Holden is a guy that makes $1.7 million. He's a depth defenseman for the Golden Knights. So Holden is a guy that they could easily, you know, just put in the minors.
Yeah.
And that's your $1 million. So, you know, obviously Pacioretty making $7 million a year. He's one of the highest paid guys on the team. You know, you would have to think, guys, that if Kelly McCrimmon is shopping or eventually trades Max Pacioretty, you would have to think that a center, there's a good chance that a center is coming back.
Well, that would be where their weakness is up the middle. But, you know, if you're trading Pacioretty, look, the Golden Knights, you know, have a lot of talent, but they don't have a lot of what I'll call dynamic goal-scoring talent. Max Pacioretty led the team in goals last year, and Jesse Granger talks about this in an article on The Athletic. You know, he led the team in goals last year, but I think it was, what, 32 goals, if I'm not mistaken?
Yep.
So it's not like this is an overwhelming amount. And, you know,
well, that was also a shortened season.
Of course, yep. It was a shortened season. Valid. And the Golden Knights are you know, an analytical darling in that they control the puck, and they take a great deal of shots on goal. But a lot of them they're not what you would call, you know, a great, I'm going to say, catch and release scoring team. It's off the rush. It's
catch and release. What are we talking about? Fishing here?
Well, you understand what I mean in terms of, you know, get the puck on your stick, like a line A on the stick, off the stick.
In the conservation net. Waters or what?
Before you know it. So, you know, if you're trading Pacioretty, I mean, first of all, I'm not sure what kind of return you're getting a month before the start of the season.
Yeah.
And secondly, I'm just not sure how this is benefiting your team.
Right. And you nailed it. I mean, the Golden Knights are an elite possession team. Absolutely elite. I mean, mm-hmm. We know that from that series against the Jets with players like Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith, and they're even better now. And you're right. I mean, aside from Max Pacioretty, you know, Mark Stone, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, Carlson, I think he had, what did he have, 14 or 15 goals last year? I mean, the Golden Knights would like to get him, you know, closer to that 40-goal season he had, you know, in their first year, right? So it makes no sense to trade Pacioretty. I mean, we've talked about this. The Golden Knights are one of the best teams in the West, but they're not one of the best teams up the middle.
Right.
Right? So that is your biggest weakness. And Paul Stastny, that's why that trade, you know, really does hurt you. He was your second-line center last year. And obviously they expect big things out of Cody Glass. I'm not sure if Cody Glass necessarily slots into your 2C role or you'd like to shelter him a little bit more, but obviously Glass, you know, Winnipegger, he factors in, you know, not just to the plans for this year, but going forward as one of their top draft picks, right? So, and prospects. So, you know, when you have a lot of good young players and you have a lot of good young distributors, you don't want to trade your number one sniper. And Pacioretty's contract is very favorable. Like 3 years at $7 million a year, AAV. Like, to me, that's exactly what Pacioretty should be paid. It's not like he's got, you know, Dave, like 6 years left on his contract.
Right. Exactly.
So to me, like, you're trading a really good contract. So, you know, Marchessault maybe makes a little bit more sense to me than Pacioretty. And then obviously Marc-Andre Fleury was a guy whose name was already out there. So Marc-Andre Fleury comes as no surprise. It's really, you
could
know,
get, if you wanted to take Marc-Andre Fleury's salary, you could get him for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And we believe that there were several teams that were interested. Like, you know, a team like Edmonton was a team that was rumored, maybe even Ottawa.
They don't,
right?
Edmonton then, doesn't have the house salary.
Well, and that's just it. They would have to move somebody out. So, I mean, there were some teams I think that definitely were calling on Marc-Andre Fleury. But hey, you have two really good goalies if you're Vegas, so that's a position of strength. So, I mean, I think at this point you would look at burying, you know, a Nick Holden type contract as opposed to trading Pacioretty.
Right. How much of this raw? I mean, the Golden Knights seem to specialize in roster churn. Mm-hmm. Almost, you know, what did Chevy do lately? Was always, sort of the tongue-in-cheek comment on Twitter.
Right.
But you know, when it comes to the Golden Knights and Kelly McCrimmon and the brain trust there, it's you know, who haven't they traded today? Almost. You know, how much of that roster churn do you think begins to maybe weigh on players? You know, that they're, you know, they're there always, it seems like, you know, it's a short time, not a long time for a lot of the Golden Knights guys. I mean, they, you know, the Golden Knights got Pacioretty, what, you know, it was 2 years ago now? And now all of a sudden he's on the trade block and he's almost on his way out just as quickly as he arrived.
As Ted DiBiase used to say many years ago,
everybody's got a price.
Everybody's got a price. Yeah. And the fact
are you
is,
the $1 million man?
Well, it could be, I guess, in theory, But the fact is, I think, Drew, to your point, I think that's part of the what has allowed this team to have success is that they're not afraid. Yep. They really don't have to have that loyalty ingrained because a lot of these guys, they didn't draft. You know what I mean? It's different when you have these guys that you've drafted and developed and you've spent time and money to bring these guys along. Whereas Vegas, why do you need to have loyalty? I mean, really, you poached a bunch of guys from a bunch of other teams, and sure, you've put them together, but you don't have that same sort of relationship to these guys, and maybe that's a positive because look how successful the team has been. Maybe the NHL set them out for success, but the truth is you don't have that same sort of connectivity, I think, that, you know, a Jets organization would have to, you know, a Jansen Harkins or Mason Appleton or
they're not their babies.
Josh Morrissey or Mark Scheifele, guys that you've drafted, you've brought them along through various, you know, situations, and now they start to produce for you. It's, you're more loath to trade a player of that nature, I think, than someone that's been on your roster for a year or two.
Real quick, Ez.
Yeah, well, I mean, they identified Alex Pietrangelo a long time ago. It's no secret that the Golden Knights were coveting him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they wanted him, and he's better than Nate Schmidt. Nate Schmidt's a really good defenseman, but, like, that was the price of acquiring Pietrangelo. And Paul Stastny was in the last year of his contract, right? So even though you lose center depth there, I mean, that's the cost of acquiring, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league. So I agree with Dave. I mean, this is, you know, they're going into their fourth year of existence, and, you know, you have to trade some quality players to acquire quality players. And quite frankly, all the players that they've acquired are top notch. Like Mark Stone, I've said this. I mean, I think he's a top 10 winger in the NHL. Mm-hmm. That was a great acquisition. And yeah, you had to give up, you know, some good players. Like Eric Brandstrom was a guy that you had to give up to acquire Mark Stone, right? So like, that's the cost of doing business. But they've assembled one of the best teams in the league, and trading Pacioretty just wouldn't be advisable because he's one of your top snipers. So again, we don't expect him to be traded. And Jesse Granger, you know, quite eloquently, you know, wrote about why the Golden Knights shouldn't trade Pacioretty, but they are going to have to do some salary cap maneuvering because, like Tampa Bay, they're one of those teams that's over the cap.
When we come back, we're going to talk about pro beach hockey. Probably didn't expect to hear those three words come out of my mouth. Chris Peters of ESPN.com with a great article that takes you back to the years of 1998 through 2000 to talk about the Pro Beach Hockey League. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hope you're having a pleasant and enjoyable Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us by a text message. Send your text to 129090. Getting a text in that says, Braden McNabb to the Jets, please, to solve the Golden Knights' defensive troubles. Salary cap troubles.
He's a good defenseman.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. But nice to wishful thinking, nonetheless. It is the holiday season. You never know what might materialize underneath the tree. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good buddy Chris Peters. Chris, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you.
Yes, appreciate that, Chris. Brought you on to talk about, to start with, certainly, this great article you wrote about pro beach hockey. Now, people may tune in right now and hear me say three words of pro beach hockey, might think I've lost my mind, and that would be a fair comment to make. But this was a thing that not only existed, but was even popular back in the late 90s, the Pro Beach Hockey League existing from 1998 to 2000. It's a great article. We tweeted it out from our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. I guess, Chris, let me start with, you know, why now? Why was this the time to go down memory lane and talk about something as esoteric as pro beach hockey?
Because I wanted to.
Good answer.
Good answer, Chris.
No, it's, yeah, I mean, I've had this idea for a while. I obviously grew up loving pro beach hockey as a kid. Like that was coming on like right around the time I was in eighth grade going into high school. And, you know, I played hockey and obviously played street hockey and everything else, or road hockey if I were in Canada. And, you know, certainly, just love that whole process. And, you know, I was kind of sparked, one of my colleagues, Emily Kaplan, wrote a story about, you know, how NHL players were basically, buying inline skates and masks, during the shutdown just to give themselves an opportunity to skate some. And so that kind of sparked it a little bit. And then, you know, I was just kind of looking around, and it's been 20 years since we had, you know, had the Pro Beach Hockey, around, and there's just not a lot about the league online anymore. There's no stats, there's no There's no standings, there's no records, you know, it's just kind of a Wikipedia page and maybe like three or four YouTube videos. And I said, you know what, let's just kind of bring it back into the forefront here on the 20th anniversary and just say, especially since we don't have hockey right now or live hockey, you know, all across the U.S. and Canada at the moment, like, why not take a walk down memory lane while we have the time? And so I pitched it, and they're like, yeah, let's do it. And obviously I had a blast writing it.
Yeah, and we all had a blast reading it, and you know, it's got great reviews online. And like Drew said, we're going to tweet out the link. And I remember, you know, we were in high school, you know, at the time, seems like a really long time ago. That's showing my age. I'm a class of 2000 boy, but you know, when you think back, and there were several things, Chris, that I didn't know about. Like, I didn't know Marty McSorley was the first pro beach hockey color commentator, because obviously yeah. You know, his brother Chris McSorley, as you know, was heavily involved with founding pro beach hockey. But another thing I found that was really interesting was Dave McLean, the founder of the league, would literally, you know, go up and down the beach in California and literally just find players to play.
Yeah, that was news to me as well. And, you know, it's just kind of interesting. A lot of the guys that played in Roller Hockey International and Pro Beach Hockey, you know, some of those guys spent their summers in Los Angeles, and a lot of them were trying to, you know, get into the acting business or getting into filmmaking. And that was something that, you know, hockey was obviously one of their passions and the other was film. And so these guys would be, you know, they'd just be playing on the courts and the streets and near beaches. And it was interesting enough, like, one of the guys that they found off the street was an 18-year-old, I think he was an 18 or 19-year-old kid who was basically Los Angeles-based and was just playing with a lot of these guys in the streets, and he was really good. And his name is Oliver David, and he's now the head coach of the Dubuque Fighting Saints in the USHL. and, you know, and he didn't have a pro career. He didn't, you know, so, like, his pro experience is in pro beach hockey. And I didn't have time to catch up with him before the story, because I thought it was just neat that he kind of carved out a path in ice hockey. But he was one of those guys that they had kind of brought in and turned out he was, you know, exceptional on wheels and really was, you know, one of the guys that helped make the league go.
Chris Peters is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about his great article about pro beach hockey. It's available on ESPN.com. We tweeted out a link to it on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. You know, Chris, it's amazing that, you know, back in 1998, this was actually televised on ESPN. It was on ESPN2. You know, are you surprised that here in 2020 with the, you know, the unlimited number of TV channels that we sort of have right now, that nobody's thought to try and bring this back and maybe give it, rejuvenate and maybe give it a second life 20 years after it did hit the big time?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, that was probably the most common reply that I got from the story was, bring it back. You know, I'd love to see it now. And I wonder, with all the lessons that they learned, if they would one day bring it back. But, you know, I think the issue is, and David McLean, who I did manage to speak to, you know, who's just been, he's been involved in pro wrestling. He was involved in Roller Hockey International, all the, you know, professional polo, like all these different things that he's done. And he's such an idea guy. You know, I asked him as like a creative person, you know, why do you think it's that we don't see stuff like this? And he said, it comes down to a lack of creativity and a lack of willingness to take risks. You're always looking for home runs now. And you say, okay, well, here's a niche within a niche sport, you know, particularly in the United States. And there might be some fear there. But I mean, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, man, Amazon Prime, give me Pro Beach Hockey or something like that. You know, throw something on a streaming service. Because the amazing thing about this league is they would film it over, I think the first season they filmed it over 3 weekends, and the second year they filmed it over 6 weekends. And they just basically stockpiled games for ESPN to air at that time. So it was a really interesting business model. It was not a lot of huge costs associated, and they had major sponsors that, you know, allowed the league to generate revenue beyond, you know, having the TV rights with ESPN and the advertising that came from that. It was such a hot property at that moment in time. And roller hockey at the time too was a booming business. And really at the end of pro beach hockey, and this is something that David had mentioned, is like the industry of roller hockey and the industry of inline skating period really started to decline in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And so that coincided with the collapse of Roller Hockey International, the fact that pro beach hockey, which, you know, it's mentioned in the story, and I wish I could find the data to back it up just to prove it. But, you know, some of the guys that I talked to said, based on the ratings, they had outrated some of the games, the playoff games that were on ESPN2 that same summer. So, you know, it's just kind of a weird thing that people just gravitated towards. And it was unique. It was fun. And unfortunately, really short-lived, because I think that it was just starting to find its legs there in the last two seasons.
Well, you know, Chris, something that you pay a lot of attention to is college hockey and what's going on with a lot of these prospects. And I saw you tweet that the University of Alaska Fairbanks, a men's hockey program, has opted out of the next season. And we're seeing that. We've already seen a number of colleges opt out, and that impacts, you know, the way prospects develop. We saw one of the Jets draft picks, Austin Wong, his team in Harvard, they opted out. So he's back playing with the USHL. But what is kind of ramifications is this having now throughout the course of college hockey, because you're now losing a number of these teams? Are these prospects doing similar to what Austin Wong did and going and playing in, you know, the USHL, or are they, what are they doing to further their development?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like in a situation with Alaska Fairbanks, which just announced it and kind of blindsided the players and staff of the hockey team, they didn't know that was necessarily going to be coming. You know, it's really too late to find a roster spot, and you have to be junior eligible. And that's a team that doesn't have a lot of junior eligible players anymore, because they tend to get older players that are, you know, kind of, late in the recruiting process. And so, you know, for teams like Harvard and Union and RPI, teams that, you know, have had recruited players, they lost a lot of players to the transfer portal or to pro contracts. The ones that, you know, and Yale, like Yale had their captain, Phil Kemp, he was supposed to be the captain this year, and he ended up leaving. He was going to, you know, finish out his schooling. He ended up signing with Edmonton after, you know, after Yale's season was canceled. So it's going to have long-term impacts on a lot of teams. And you know, Harvard was lucky that they had enough younger players that were age-eligible to return to junior. They also did that with Sean Farrell, who's a Canadiens draft pick. They did it with Henry Theron, who went to the Dubuque Fighting Saints, and he's going to be on the U.S. national junior team this year. And he was one of the top freshman defensemen in college hockey in terms of point production. So, I mean, you know, those guys are probably going to be able to go back and help Harvard. But teams like RPI and Union, you know, those guys are transferring out, and that's not going to help them, you know, building their programs back up. So it could have massive ramifications in terms of the landscape of college hockey, you know, the viability of teams and the competitiveness of teams in the coming years. But, you know, I don't know. I think we're just kind of scratching the surface. Luckily enough, though, there has been enough of college hockey that's been managed to happen this year that it's not going to be as widespread as I think we initially feared of a lost season in the college ranks. So, you know, players are playing now, and for the most part, you know, the Big Ten only has had to cancel one series so far. The NCHC is playing in a pod in Omaha and have not have any games disrupted yet by that. And then the ECAC, which lost almost all of its teams because they were so indebted to the Ivy League, they are going to play a four-team conference season with the four remaining teams in that league. So, I mean, it's just people are finding a way. But, yeah, this is going to have an impact for a long time.
Chris, last question for you here. I know that you cover the World Juniors, and you know Team USA just recently announced their roster. We found out yesterday, courtesy of Bob McKenzie, that Nick Robertson wasn't going to be allowed to play in the tournament because Toronto wants him to be ready for their training camp. But then news came out that John Beecher, Boston Bruins first-round pick, and Thomas Bortolo, who's a San Jose Sharks pick, they've tested positive for COVID-19. They're not going to be available for USA Hockey. Obviously, USA Hockey has a lot of depth up front. A lot of really good players. Alex Turcotte, Trevor Zegras come to mind. Cole Caulfield, Canadiens draft pick. But how devastating is it that they're not going to be able to have, you know, some of these really high-end players available to them?
Yeah, I think it drastically, you know, changes the top nine. Bortolo was, I believe, playing in camp with Bobby Brink, and I'm not sure who was on his left wing, but like basically that was going to be the third line, the third scoring line. Just a point of clarification, Bortolo, at this point, we don't know whether or not he's tested positive. We do know Beecher because his parents told. Right. Yeah, that's all right. But it's confusing. But Bortolo was Beecher's roommate, so that's the reason that as a close contact, because of the IIHF protocols, he would have to be removed. And that's happened to other teams as well. So, you know, the issue is, though, is if Johnny Beecher, you know, had a positive test in camp where they had really gotten away, you know, so far unscathed, but had, you know, five days into their camp, that's a concern, obviously, for what that means for the rest of the team. But just in terms of the on-ice product, I mean, you know, I think there were players there that you know, they brought that have more of a grinding physical element, like Landon Slaggart and Patrick Moynihan and Brett Berard, that are guys that would, you know, kind of be on not necessarily like true grinders, but just guys that are, you know, going to be viewed as kind of the low lineup guys that now suddenly you're going to have to position in a higher position in the lineup. Beecher's a returning player. Bortolo has been one of the most skilled players in college hockey this year, just racking up highlight reel plays. And I think that they were really going to rely on him down the middle. But as you mentioned, they have good wings. I think their top six is as good as any in this tournament. The Robertson loss is obviously huge as well. I thought he was USA's best player down the stretch for portions of the last tournament. So it's going to be very difficult. The U.S. has decided now to take 9 defensemen, which, you know, so that means at least one or two of those guys will be, or 3 of those guys could be in the press box, depending on the way the lineup shakes out. But it all kind of comes down. I think Spencer Knight is probably the X factor for this team as a goaltender, and that's going to be the difference between them contending and possibly not meddling. Because I think, you know, on paper, you look at Canada, you look at Russia, potentially stronger teams on paper. But this U.S. team, it will be interesting to watch, and certainly they still have enough firepower to get the job done.
And Chris Peters is with ESPN.com. We highly recommend you checking out his great work, including his great article on pro beach hockey. Chris, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Happy holidays to you and yours, buddy.
Same to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Chris. Thanks so much. When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday morning, we talk about memorabilia. If you had $1.3 million, would you buy Wayne Gretzky's rookie card? We'll talk about our favorite pieces of memorabilia, and we'll look at the Bodog scoreboard. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to all of our guests who joined us on the program today. In case you missed any of the interviews, they will be available later on illegalcurve.com and tsn1290.ca. Of course, a look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. A full day of college sports underway. College basketball, we're not going to talk about the Kentucky score. They're currently losing handily to Notre Dame, which is putting a damper on my day. And then in football, a full day of college football on TSN and the TSN fat network of channels. Alabama, they're doing what Alabama does. They're up 17-3 on Arkansas, and Georgia up 14-7 on Missouri. All the games, you can check it out on TSN. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play. Let's talk about this text message that Ezzy got earlier this week. Hi, Todd. When you come in this week, could you please bring me in the dimensions of the urn and a picture of it? Thanks. Are you Todd?
No, I'm not Todd. And I didn't know you were going to bring that up on air, Drew.
Oh, of course I'm bringing it up on air.
I was a little bit creeped out.
Yeah.
I mean, he's talking about an urn. Obviously, it was a wrong number.
Did you at least offer your condolences?
No, I didn't answer him. I didn't want to engage with Todd.
Not only that.
Well, now someone doesn't have an urn.
Well, no, it seems as though somebody is reusing an urn. Because they're asking for the dimensions of the urn and a picture right. of it.
By the way, Drew's done a deep dive here, which Ezzy, I don't know. Yeah. Deep dive 6 feet under.
Well, no, it's an urn. Those don't go under.
Yeah. That goes into a mausoleum,
I think.
It goes
into your onto mantle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I asked myself, I didn't ask myself that, Drew. I think your mind went a little too far when you were thinking about the usage of the urn.
But it seems to be somebody has bought an urn.
If that's the case, that could be the ultimate Kijiji gone wrong.
I thought that they were just talking about, you know, a loved one that had passed away, and they, for some reason, he wanted the dimensions. I had no idea why he wanted the dimensions, but yeah, I guess it could have been a re-gifted urn.
It just seems very odd that you, I mean, first of all, to get that, I mean, I got to say, I'm impressed by your restraint that you didn't follow up with some additional Earth-related questions.
I'm actually shocked as he didn't book that person for to be a guest on today's show.
It's a fair point as well. He does have his phone number, so we theoretically could call the individual and find out why they are looking for more urn-related.
Yeah. That'll be next week.
It could also be the Undertaker's urn. Like, we don't know,
It could be. It's possible that the Undertaker is texting you, inquiring about an urn. But, only you. I got to tell you, only you.
That's true.
You know, I know that people will... Could happen to anybody. It's just a wrong number.
No, that's an Ezzy.
Only Ezzy would get that specific kind of wrong text. I mean, you've had wrong texts before. Yep. I've had wrong texts. None of them have ever been about an urn. And I think on that note, we're done. We might be done forever. Time will tell.
Put the show in the urn.
Yeah, that's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Chris Peters of ESPN, Marty B. Ron of TSN. We are also joined, of course, by John Mattis of The Score and Paul Edmonds of TSN Radio 1290. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on IllegalCurve.com. It's on TSN1290.ca. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean back at the station for doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.